and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Firefighters are struggling to contain any of the large wildfires in the Los Angeles area. At least five people have died. Crews with cadaver dogs are searching the rubble for any more victims. 1,300 structures have been destroyed. 60,000 are still threatened. CBS's Danya Backus says fire crews are watching out for any new fires.
There have been some other fires that have popped up overnight, one in the Hollywood Hills area that prompted evacuations. And we did see thousands of people try to leave again, some streets gridlocked, but officials were able to get a good handle on those fires.
L.A. County District Attorney Nathan Hochman says 20 people have been arrested for looting.
If you want to go ahead and loot, if you want to commit burglary, if you want to engage in grand theft, you will be arrested. You will be prosecuted.
The NBA has postponed tonight's Lakers-Hornets game. CBS News Special Report. I'm Michael Wallace.
Join us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Playmakers, brought to you by Quality Plus Printing. Call in with your sports thoughts and feelings only on WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Brittany Merlot. The University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point got a new chief of police. Derek Tritz tells us more.
Chief Michelle Haywood was sworn in on Monday as the new chief of police and security services for the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Haywood is an experienced law enforcement officer with 27 years of service in the Milwaukee Police Department. She has completed training in active standby ship for law enforcement through the FBI National Academy and is active in professional law enforcement organizations, such as the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. Haywood now reports to Pratima Gandhi, the Vice Chancellor of Business Affairs at the university, who said she's looking forward to Haywood's leadership and believes that her extensive experience will help maintain a high standard of safety for both students and faculty. Tony Babel, the university's previous chief, retired at the end of 2024, after nearly 7 years of service, during which he played an integral role in the university's response to the pandemic.
And the store, convenience stores in central Wisconsin, have transitioned to a new operator. Reliance Fuel, a Pennsylvania-based company, acquired the store locations from Team Sherrill in late December. They say all associates have retained their positions and all current locations remain open. Reliance Fuel will continue to offer the Impact Rewards Plus program, and they say in the future, the store will be updated to carry its Fuel on Wisconsin branding. Team Sherrill will continue to operate 7 Sherrill Tire and Auto Service locations and 30 Subway restaurants. And a study on PFAS and wastewater shows an increase in the so-called forever chemicals. A concerning trend is nearly half of all drinking water is contaminated now. Scientists say that some of the factors for the increase include the use of chemicals and medication and the effects of drought on local water systems. I'm Brittany Merlot for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks kicked the Spurs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks with a dominating 121-105 victory over the San Antonio Spurs. Doc Rivers on how he thought his team played defensively.
I loved it. I told him that at halftime. It's like, guys, back-to-back games, our defensive focus and attention to detail was on point. And when we play like that, we're really tough. Because if we get multiple misses, we're going to eventually make threes.
College hoops, the Wisconsin Badgers will try to extend their 4-game winning streak when they host the Minnesota Gophers. That's tomorrow night, 6 p.m. at the Kohl Center in Madison. NFL, Packers holding practice, getting ready to face the Eagles. Sunday afternoon at 3:30, Jaden Reed says it's too soon for the Packers season to be over just yet.
We ain't worked this hard to come this far. You know, we went through a lot, you know, in camp, through the season to even get here. So our mindset is on one goal, and, you know, that's how we're preparing this week.
That's Packers wide receiver Jaden Reed. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy tonight with scattered flurries and snow showers. Lows mid-teens. A mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow. Highs upper 20s. Dry Saturday. More snow possible late Saturday night and Sunday. Weekend highs in the mid to upper 20s. It's 28 degrees right now.
The excitement.
Oh, he stones Brodzinski with a glove save.
The energy.
What's he going to do? He shoots and he scores.
stars, the tradition.
You've got to understand history if you're ever going to write your own.
It's everything.
He scores. Badgers answer right back.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, streaming live and on the Civic Media app.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Max Inc. Radio, original local music from Wisconsin, Saturday and Sunday, 6 to midnight. This weekend, we welcome brand new band Take Back the Sun, and Terry chats with Aaron Schulke about Wisconsin polka. It's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Welcome, if you're just joining us. Welcome back, if you've been with us for the first hour. My name's Maggie Dawn. I'm host of the Maggie Dawn Show right here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited today because I've got my special guest co-host, Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics, a Navy veteran, and a two-time candidate in the 5th Congressional District here in Wisconsin. And we are joined in studio by a former colleague, good friend. Let's see if I can get all of these credentials right. You are a former state representative, a former county board supervisor, and a former county clerk.
And you left a former state senator, which most of the time.
Yes, most of the time. His name's Joe Czarnecki. Welcome to the show, Joe. It's such a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Very excited. Haven't seen you since I left the county. So this is a bit of a reunion of sorts as well for us. And small little, this is the small walkie of it all, if you will. And that is that Joe's son and I both went to law school together.
Yes.
How's he doing?
He's doing very well, actually. He's just took a
still
new,
teaching.
He's teaching. Yeah, he's at Case University in New York, and he's going to actually move to Chicago next semester.
He just got accepted
as the dean of the law school at Kent. Is that the law school?
Yes, okay. Chicago Kent. Well, that'll be easier for he and I to catch up. Again, welcome, Joe. Joe, you wrote an incredible memorial to President Jimmy Carter for the Milwaukee County Democratic Party. If you're listening, folks, we're going to add that to our show notes for today so you can go check it out for yourself. But tell us how you first met President Carter, Joe, and what that was like.
Well, I was a college student when I first met him back in February of 1975. I was active in the College Democrats at UWM in Milwaukee, and we had our state Young Democratic Convention actually in Eau Claire in February of 1975. It was a beautiful below zero weekend.
Sounds about right.
And we had been trying to get a keynote speaker, and well, your older folks remember there were many Democratic candidates for president back then, and we invited them all, and Jimmy Carter was the only one who accepted to come and speak to us. So he gave our keynote speech in the evening, and after the speech, you know, some of us, you know, stood around and talked with him. He gave his famous, "I'm Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president" speech.
Yep.
It was a great speech, and many of us were very much impressed with him. And so we were talking with him, and like good college students, we said, "Well, you know, when you're done, we've got a party up in our room. You want to join us?" And he said, "Well, I've got to meet with some folks, but, you know, I'll try and stop by later." And we figured, well, yeah, he was just saying that.
Right. Being nice.
And then later in the night, I don't even know what time it was, but there was a knock on the door, and we thought, well, it's just more partiers coming by. And
where were you? Were you in like a very classic house?
No, we were in a Holiday Inn, I think.
Oh, yeah. Even more highly suspect, right. the hotel room.
Yeah, it was a hotel room of a Holiday Inn, I think.
Yeah.
And he stopped by, and and came to the door. We, like I said, we just thought it was more partiers. Somebody answered the door, and there was Jimmy Carter, and he said, "Hey, I hear there's a party up here."
Unbelievable.
And he worked the room. He shook hands with everybody in the room, and we offered him a drink, and he informed us that he didn't really drink except for an occasional glass of wine with his wife, Rosalind, and shook hands with everybody in the room and, you know, kind of left then. But many of us were impressed. And, you know, then again, I didn't see him again until that summer when he came to the State Democratic Party convention in Wisconsin. And that's when I became a volunteer on his campaign.
Which is, that is how politics used to work. You know, folks, I'm talking with Joe Czarnecki. He's been serving as an elected official in the state of Wisconsin for many years, now retired. He met Jimmy Carter back when he was in college, and the former president stopped by the hotel room after that meeting to say hello to everybody at the after party, if you will. I'm going to toss it over to my great co-host, Tom Paulswitz. Joe, as you know, Tom, we were talking before the show that you and your wife both got very involved with Habitat Humanity. Tom, do you have a couple questions for Joe?
Yeah, Joe, thinking back on that time, what was the thing that stood out to you most? Because that was an interesting election. It was right after, you know, Ford had pardoned Nixon, and, you know, things were really up in the air as far as what direction our country was going to go. But what really stood out about him in that campaign that really led you to say, this is the person we need to elect next?
Well, as Maggie mentioned, politics was a lot different then. Yeah. I remember, again, I was a volunteer on the campaign, and I remember one of the times he came to Milwaukee, and the campaign called me up and said, well, can you meet him at the airport? And I said, yeah. He says, well, he's going to be meeting some people in Milwaukee. Can you drive him around town? And again, this was, you know, probably in 70, early 76, before the Wisconsin primary.
Yep.
And you know, before presidential candidates had Secret Service details and everything. So I met him at the airport, and he gets off the plane carrying his own garment bag.
Wow.
No one with him.
No entourage?
No entourage. Yep.
Right.
It might speak to the long shot that Carter, like, at the time, right? Nobody thought it was going to be Jimmy Carter.
No, and I met him with one other individual, and it was an early morning flight. I don't even remember where he was coming from, and he said he hadn't had breakfast yet, and so we had breakfast at the airport. I still remember he had a cheese omelet.
Oh, is that cute?
Yeah, I think I had toast because I had like $2 in my pocket then, and that was it. And So I drove him around Milwaukee. I drove him around with a reporter from the Milwaukee Sentinel. We went to the Journal and the Sentinel. We went to a couple of other places. And again, it was real informal. And we went to a reception at somebody's house. And we had to stop and pick up my wife then. We had just been married. And we picked him up and my wife was going to get in the car, and this is one of my favorite stories about the real Jimmy Carter. I had a very small car. I had a Chevy Vega.
Oh, so it was tiny.
Me, Jimmy Carter, and a Chevy Vega, and we picked up my wife to go to this event at a person's house, and she goes to get in, crawl in the back seat of the car, and being such a gentleman, he says, no, you can't sit in the back seat. I'll get in the back seat. You sit in the front. And he crawls in the back seat of this little Chevy Vega.
As, with the seats that flip up.
Yeah. As we drive to this reception at a supporter's home, was sort of a meet and greet. So, I mean, that's
different time.
That's one of the things I really like about him is, you know, a lot of little personal interesting stories like that.
It is both a demarcation of the different time, but I think a reflection of very, in a very real way, the man himself, right? It could be today, and if President Carter were still with us and he was physically able, he'd still be pretzeling himself into the back of the Chevy Vega, I'm certain, right? Tell us a little bit about your involvement with Habitat for Humanity and how you and your wife continued your relationship, if you will, with the Carters.
Well, we've been contributors to Habitat for Humanity. I guess one of my big disappointments is I never got a chance to build a house with Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
That's something I always wanted to do. And he did build homes in Milwaukee in the 80s. And there are still people in Milwaukee who built those houses with him, who are still living in those houses. And I think that that's something that's remarkable about President Carter, is he will always have that legacy of people who worked next to him to build the house that they live in and still live in today. And I think that's one of the remarkable things. And that's one of the reasons we got involved in Habitat for Humanity, was because of the good work that he did there.
Just incredible. Folks, I'm joined today by Joe Czarnecki, former state representative and senator, former Milwaukee County Board Supervisor, and former Milwaukee County Clerk. Met President Carter on the campaign trail, ended up volunteering for his campaign, and met President Carter and Rosalynn numerous times over the rest of your adult life, given your involvement with Habitat for Humanity. Give us a sense of your impressions, Joe, of President Carter's legacy. And I really, as you and I chatted preceding your interview today, I really view this sort of in two pieces. In the end sum, it's one legacy. But I really think of it as what was President Carter's impacts and what's his legacy as a president, his term as president. But more broadly, then, you really cannot separate his presidency from all of the great service to not just Americans, but humanity in the 40 plus years after his presidency. What are your thoughts when you think about President Carter's legacy?
Well, I think there's two things about his legacy. One is, as you know, Jimmy Carter personally, and then the other as his presidency. And personally, I think it's very interesting. When Carter left the White House, he wasn't a popular guy.
Right.
And I remember we went down to Plains, my whole family, my kids were young then, I think. My daughter might have been three, my son seven, and we met with President and Mrs. Carter at Maranatha Baptist Church to go to the church service and to go to his Sunday school class. And that wasn't as popular as it was later in his life. And I think at the Sunday school class, there were maybe six or eight other people besides wife and I at that class. And the people at the church were just wonderful. They took our kids into a class for the kids. And you know, it was so much different. And after the church service and the Sunday school class, President and Mrs. Carter talked with my wife and I and our kids for the longest time after church. And one of the most, I think, almost painful things was him telling us about building the Carter Presidential Museum and Library, and told us that, you know, he was sad because one of the things he had to do was raise money to build it. But he's kind of sad because he said he raised more money from people from other countries than he did from people from the United States in order to build it.
Which, remarkable.
Which was sort of how people felt about him back, you know, in the 80s.
In the immediate aftermath.
He left presidency. And that changed, obviously, over the years in his personal life and his involvement with the Carter Center and other things. But his presidency, again, was much more remarkable than people, I think, give him credit for. I mean, he created the Department of Education. And if you look at the United States moving forward, what's more important than education?
Yeah.
He created the Department of Energy.
Yep.
He was the one of the greatest environmental presidents. He put solar panels on the White House, which Ronald Reagan took down. But, he did so much. He was
visionary in many respects that I don't even think today we can fully appreciate. We're going to have to take care of a wee bit of business, Joe. My special guest today, Joe Czarnecki, former colleague of mine, former county clerk, county board supervisor, state representative, and state senator, a man who's met the president, Jimmy Carter, and his wife, Rosalynn, many times. We continue our discussion of President Carter's legacy with my special co-host, Tom Paulswitz, after these brief messages right here on The Maggie Dawn Show. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-7...
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Hey, it's me time at Chula Vista. Time for you to pamper yourself. Wisconsin's most complete resort experience has everything you want. Fine-tuned for 70 years by four generations of the Kaminsky family, Chula Vista can be easygoing with colorful scenic river walks, 18 holes of classic golf, a relaxing spa, or you can go all out in 80,000 square feet of indoor water park. zip lining through canyon views in Chula's Aerial Adventure Park. And dining comes any way you like it, from pizza to Wisconsin's number one ranked steakhouse. More than 600 guest rooms to choose from, with $10 million in updates. Chula Vista, everything you've been wanting, all right here on site. Check it out at ChulaVistaResort.com.
Miles and miles of freshly groomed cross-country and hiking trails. Ski, sled, snowshoe. Warm up at our indoor water park. ChulaVistaResort.com.
You're an organ donor, right? Here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Heroicdeed.com.
Matt LePay for Steinhoffels. Since 1934, Steinhoffels has been Wisconsin's furniture and mattress destination for quality, selection, and service. Steinhoffels is a proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics. During the weekend of January 10th through the 12th, visit any Wisconsin Steinhoffels store, spend $1,999 or more, and get a $100 gift card to the University Bookstore to get the latest Badgers gear and apparel. Relax, it's Steinhoffels.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Had a bad day again. She said I would not understand. Left a note and said, I'm sorry, I had a bad day again.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. I'm host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, which you can hear Monday through Friday across the Civic Media Radio Network. I broadcast to you from 540 a.m. across southeastern Wisconsin. That's WAUK. But do not worry if you're not in southeastern Wisconsin. Your local Civic Media Talk Radio affiliate has got this show. And if you are outside of that network area, you can always download the Civic Media app or watch us on my Facebook page at Maggie Dawn Show, or on Civic Media's YouTube page. Hello to everybody that's watching and listening on one of those platforms. I got a great guest co-host with me today. His name is Tom Paulswitz. He is himself a Navy veteran, just like President Carter, whom we're memorializing today with our special guest in the studios with me, Joe Zarneski, a former county board supervisor, county clerk, state rep, and state senator who worked and met with the president and his wife many times over the course of your life. Tom, I'm going to kick it to you, especially as a Navy veteran. What questions do you have for Joe this afternoon?
Yeah, so far, Joe, great stories. I mean, it's really interesting to see on the inside from somebody that you can only usually see on the outside. One of the things I've been thinking about, though, is, you know, as we've gone through this memorial of President Carter is, you know, he had such a great character. He was a kind person. He cared about people. And one of the things I saw was his election, because I was in high school when he was elected. His election was almost a rebuttal to what had happened in the Nixon administration. And people really wanted character again. People really cared about the person and wanted somebody who was honest and had integrity. And somehow the Republicans were able to, portray him as weak, which to me was, you know, all the great things that he did and all the things that he was able to accomplish. But the Republicans had really made out to make Reagan look so strong, and therefore in comparison, President Carter look weak. Were you able to have a conversation with him about that, how he felt about that, and what really happened in that 1980 election?
Mm. Well, a lot of things happened in 1980 that were not, you know, pleasant. First of all, we had the Iran hostage crisis,
yes,
which was something that I think caused his defeat. The other thing I think was the challenge from Ted Kennedy in the primary.
Yes.
Those two things I think were things that probably doomed his 1980 reelection bid. I think he probably could have survived one or the other, but I think the combination was something that really you know, doomed his campaign at that point. I mean, I worked on the 1980 campaign as well. I was a Carter delegate to the 1980 Democratic National Convention, and it was a very spirited, very difficult convention. You had the Carter and the Kennedy
factions. Yeah.
They were obviously against each other, and some of us were friends. And so it was a very difficult election for a lot of us. In fact, for me, I remember the 1980 November election was bittersweet, because that was the year I was first elected to the Wisconsin Assembly in that November election, and Jimmy Carter lost, and Gaylord Nelson, our great senator, also lost that election in 1980.
Yes.
So I remember that November night as being a very bittersweet night.
I do see some bizarre echoes to our current moment in a way.
Yes.
Maybe not bizarre, but just echoes. Of course, the distinction is Carter was a relatively young man, whereas Joe Biden took the Oval Office much, much, much older. Do you see those same echoes, Joe? Where are you at, especially, you know, watching the funeral this morning? Right. And his grandson was the first eulogizer of the president, the former president. And one of the first things he said was that the thing that plagued President Carter most of all, in addition to all of his work on the environment, on housing, on disease eradication, on the national parks, it goes on and on, was that for the last 20 years, he was most fundamentally disturbed and concerned about the chasm between the haves and the have-nots, the ultra-wealthy and working people. Where are you at in this moment as we memorialize the life of President Jimmy Carter and are about to welcome into the Oval Office again Donald Trump?
Well, I just hope that President-elect Trump and some of his supporters were listening this morning to some of those speeches. I think that perhaps some of the eulogizers were speaking to them. Mm. Maybe not, but if they were listening to what President Biden said about character, if they were listening to, you know, what Jimmy Carter stood for, honesty up front. I mean, again, I remember that from his speech. I'll never tell a lie. I'll never be a betray a trust. I'll never make a misleading statement. Those were his President Carter's statements. And he said that in his campaign speech many times. And he said, if I ever do any of those things, don't support me. And he never did any of those things. He was always honest and upfront. And I think that that was one of the things that might have been harmful to his political career.
Truth-telling in politics comes with a set of risks.
Well, yeah, and, yes. You know, you should always tell the truth. And I think most politicians decorate the truth from time to time.
Ooh, I like that expression. I'm right. Decorate the truth. Joe Czarnecki on that January 9th. I'm using that.
Yes. Yeah. And again, I don't think Jimmy Carter ever did that. And I think it was to his detriment politically many, many times. But I think... overall, I think people are now seeing him for the great person he was. Maybe he wasn't the world's greatest politician, but he was a wonderful person.
And I think that is indisputable, regardless of what you think about his presidency. The man was a man of great character who cared deeply for his fellow humans. Tom, I'll give you the last question this afternoon.
Well, I think, you know, overall, if you could sum up what Jimmy Carter meant to you, what would you say?
Well, he was an inspiration to me. And again, one of the reasons I decided to run for elective office. And if you look at my early campaign literature, you'll see it's all green and white, just like Jimmy Carter's. I copied that.
Awesome.
He was a Navy veteran. My father was a Navy veteran in World War II. So there were a lot of things about him personally that inspired me to become involved in politics. And I'm just grateful to have the chance to have known him on a very small basis. We weren't close personal friends, but I got to meet him many, many times over the years. And it was a wonderful experience.
Folks, that's Joe Czarnecki, the special guest of my guest host and I today, Tom Paulswitz, here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Joe, of course, a life of service to the public, which I thank you for. It was a pleasure to serve with you for the citizens and residents of Milwaukee County. Thanks so much, Joe. When we come back, Tom and I talk more about President Carter's legacy and what it means today.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
While a large winter storm moved through the central United States, things in the upper Midwest stayed dry. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and Mace Michaels, a staff meteorologist with the Severe Studios Radio Network, says there is some concern about drought in the northern states.
I'm not terribly worried as of yet. Years can start off dry and then progress to wetter. We just don't want this trend of where the jet stream is sitting and the overall moisture pattern to kind of lay out through the rest of the winter and into the early spring. January is one of our snowier months typically, but overall snow just doesn't have a lot of moisture content in it. So when it does melt, of course, hopefully not all at once, in the late part of winter and the early part of spring, February, March, and even into early April, it puts that nice moisture back into the ground, but it still doesn't have a lot of water content in it. We would like it to pick up at least a little bit moisture-wise, so we'll have to see if that trend shifts a little bit. The jet stream, though, definitely more active to our south, and that pattern doesn't look to really change too much overall.
Once again, that's Mace Michaels, a staff meteorologist with Severe Studios. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
You see the headlines all the time, consumers confused by food labels. Well, not if they shop at Bavaria Sausage. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here, asking you to take a closer look at the food labels at Bavaria Sausage. You know, they are working towards making sure when you take a look at whatever product they've got in the store, you know exactly what it is. They're using different colors. They're also making sure that there's a picture on that label to help you better understand the protein source that you're looking at. It's all about making sure they're combining the old world flavors, the artisan blends, and making sure that you understand when there's something new in the showcase, what is it and where did it come from? Simple information, easily understood. And of course, there's always someone there to answer your questions if you've got them. Bavaria Sausage at the corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrona Road in Fitchburg, located also online, BavariaSausage.com. Old recipes, new labels. Take a look.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at $4.54, down 4 cents. New crop corn closed at $4.45, down 1 1/4. Cash beans closed at $9.94 1/2, down 2 3/4. New crop beans closed at $10.09, down 2 1/2 cents. Cash wheat closed at $5.36 1/4, down 6 1/4 cents. And new crop wheat closed at $5.57, down 6 cents. On the dairy side of things, February Class 3 milk contract is trading at $20.85 a hundredweight, down 5 cents. And March milk is trading at $20.49, up 4 cents. Barrel cheese closed at $1.87, up 3/4. 40-pound block cheese had no change and closed at $1.91 1/2. And the AA butter closed up 2 cents and closed at $2.60. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy tonight with scattered flurries and snow showers. Lows mid-teens. A mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow. Highs upper 20s. Dry Saturday, more snow possible late Saturday night and Sunday. Weekend highs in the mid to upper 20s.
It's 28 degrees right now.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I drew my brother's name one year and we went to the mall and I said, hey, while you're in there, grab me a Christmas card. We're doing the gift exchange later. So he walks upstairs, gets the card, hands it to me. I sign it, Merry Christmas. Love, Pete. And that was my gift to him that I made him pick out, pay for, and retrieve. He's like, you are the laziest, cheapest. It was absolutely beautiful.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, what is going on in North Carolina and in Florida with Judge Eileen Cannon. Jim Santel from Abacus Law Review joins us to break it all down. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If your wardrobe is looking for a little spiffing up in the new year, don't worry. Civic Media's got you covered. You want to get some AUK gear? That's the place I broadcast out of. Just go to civicmedia.us/. Go to the upper right-hand corner. We got a store there. You can buy all kinds of cool casual gear to celebrate your love or distaste for Civic Media. It'll be a conversation starter either way. My special guest co-host, which you can find with me here every Thursday, is Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable men in politics, small business owner, Navy veteran, and two-time congressional candidate, and the notoriously tough nut to crack congressional 5th District. Tom,
impossible. Yeah.
So glad to be here with you, especially given your shared service to the U.S. Navy with President Carter, whom we're probably going to spend the rest of today talking about. I wanted to ask you specifically about that. And, you know, we've had a series of presidents who haven't served in the military of late. Yes. And yet presidents serve as the commander in chief. Our incoming president, by multiple accounts, has derided the military, disrespected armed service members. As someone who served and someone who has run for elected office and served in the very branch that Jimmy Carter served in, what are some of your thoughts in this moment as it relates to the president's relationship with the armed forces?
Yeah, and I'm actually going to go back because Jimmy Carter was also in the Submariner service.
I was just going to say the only president ever certified to be a Submariner.
Right. And what people don't understand, though, is he was in the submarine service the same time Admiral Rickover was creating the nuclear submarine service. And he was instrumental. He was at the ground floor in putting systems together and putting the strategy together to be able to create a nuclear Navy, because it had never been done, obviously. But I think the biggest thing was, and I think this is a testament to who Jimmy Carter is he always looked at the long term. Everything he did, he looked at what is this going to be out into the future, not what's most expedient, not what's, you know, right in front of me. And, you know, I don't think that's just a military trait, but in the military, it served him well to be looking at how are we going to build this nuclear Navy, this nuclear submarine force that, one, you know, we can then have we can project out military strength around the world, but also protect the people who are on the submarine from deadly radiation. I mean, just fascinating thinking about how that was, you know, the beginning of that was. He was actually slated to go on the second nuclear submarine, the Seawolf, which was being built in 1953. And at that time, his father had passed away and he basically left the Navy to go run his peanut farm. But he took that consistency and that level of commitment, but also service.
Yes.
And applied it to everything else that he did in his life. And I think that's the, you know, one thing that military teaches people. You know, there are other ways to learn it, but it's the service for others. It's understanding that your role is not about you. It's about helping others get what they need in order to be able to achieve what they want. And, you know, and you and I have talked about this. That is not who Donald Trump is. Everything's about him. You know, so I'm not even going to bring him up in this context, because I think Jimmy Carter, his life is worth remembering. It's worth celebrating, because he is going to go down, maybe not as one of the greatest presidents we've ever had, but one of the greatest people who ever served as president.
A great American. Yes.
And then did all these other, you know, if he would have done just one of the things, he would be remembered, but just his entire life was spent in the service of others.
One of the very lesser known facts about Jimmy Carter is that he actually once spent 89 seconds in a melting nuclear reactor, which is like
turned a screw.
Yeah, what? Like
he turned one screw, yeah. Right? Because that was the length of time. You know, and I wish I would have known that, because one of my nuclear stories was, I remember laying on top of the nuclear reactor, changing the fluorescent light bulb above it. Mm. Obviously, the reactor was shut down at the time. But, you know, just the precautions that you had to go through in order to be able to do those things.
Yes.
We're all learning on the fly, because nobody knew exactly how much radiation.
Yeah, how much
radiation. they were abundant, cautious.
Tom, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Cardi, are you picking that up as well? We'll just give it a minute for your internet hookup to reconnect. I wanted to talk about one of the observations that our last guest, Joe Czarnecki, and again, my big thanks to Joe for joining us, who had met with President Carter many times throughout his lifetime. And he remarked upon Carter's statements that I'll never lie to you. There was a fascinating, critical memorial written by George Will. I believe it was in the Washington Post. And George Will took issue and sort of claimed that Jimmy Carter's, that the elements of his character, his commitment to character and truth telling, was sort of a put on, almost a pomposity, if you will. And yes, what I found fascinating about George Will's criticisms, and he said, no, Jimmy Carter lied, and these were his lies. Okay. So again, big thing from Jimmy Carter is, I will always tell you the truth. I will never lie. And George Will took exception to that as part of this greater criticism of Jimmy Carter. But the only two lies that George Will could point out was, he claimed in his piece that Jimmy Carter had said that he was a nuclear physicist. I haven't been able to verify that.
Never claimed it.
It comes in the context of what you were talking about. He was one of the, on the forefront of the vanguard of this evolution of our military might, of our Navy. And the second lie that George Will claimed was that Carter had denied that he had derided Lyndon Johnson as a liar. And he said a tape proved that Carter had called Lyndon Johnson lying, cheating, and distorting the truth. It is highly ironic to me. It just smacks of all of these bizarre levels of weirdness. Like, first of all, if your two lies were about what is an indisputable military record of service and an evolving, hugely important element of our military strength and might, and the other one is about a private conversation had with respect to another president's propensity to tell the truth or lack thereof, if those are the two big lies that Jimmy Carter told, like, I'll take it. I wish that those were the lies that... That was the extent of the lying by every single president. Like, are you freaking kidding me? I just thought that that was incredibly odd.
That was the beginning of the idea of normalizing.
Yes.
Right. The more you can normalize the idea that all the politicians lie, then the bigger lies make more sense. And they're no longer lies. They're just opinions, or that's just the way he speaks, or that's just how he feels about the situation. Right. So that, and that's been going on for a number of years. And that's why, you know, when I asked Joe about that question, like, you know, how did the Republican Party, how are they able to paint Jimmy Carter as weak when he had done, you know, he had done some amazing things during his presidency, but he didn't attack Iraq, you know, Iran after the hostage situation. Yeah. And I think that just infuriated people who wanted something done.
Yes.
And, you know, but I think that both siderisms is something that's been going on forever. And if you can take somebody who said, I never lie, and paint them as a liar, well, then whatever you're saying, all the lies that you're, you know, spreading out there are palatable because everybody does it.
Well, and I think, you know, Joe spoke to, and one of the reasons that I think, especially some on the more conservative end of the spectrum, find Carter to be an easy target is because he was, during his presidency, largely sort of reviled even by the Democratic Party machine. He was not liked within the Beltway. He did not play congressional politics well. And he was sort of like the anti-politician. Because, you know, the truth telling, all of this, he just was not well liked amongst the political establishment. It occurs to me today that if you want to talk about presidents that actually support economically progressive policies and believe in the middle class, Carter would stand out as that. He wasn't far left, but what he believed in were these fundamental things, the equal treatment of people under the law, women's rights. He when the church that he belonged to in Plains, Georgia, refused to admit black members, he and a bunch of friends were like, fine, we're leaving. We're going to start our own church, and did so. I mean, that is extraordinary. He appointed the first black person to ever be ambassador to the UN, the importance of housing, the environment. You can go on and on. These are things that truly have a direct benefit to regular working Americans. It strikes me again as an incredible historical juxtaposition that he was not liked within the political elite class, whether you are a Democratic elite, again, symbolized, as Joe mentioned, by the elite of the elite in the Democratic Party, the Kennedy family.
The Kennedys were so upset. That Ted ran, right? And you know, he made the presidential, he made the White House accessible to normal people because he was a normal person. Lived in a $170,000 house his entire life, right? Yeah. $167,000 house his entire life. He said and he did things that helped ordinary people. Yes. And you're right. He was then vilified by both sides and didn't have a chance in 1980. And here we are today, because that election was a key swing point in our country.
Truly.
You know? And I always have to, you know, I fess up to this because I did vote for Ronald Reagan in 1980. I was 18 years old. It was my first election. And I bought into this idea that we needed strength and we needed to combat the Soviet Union. And what a terrible disaster that was. Mm. And, you know, so many things happened from there. But the kindness, the warmth, the compassion that somebody like Jimmy Carter brought to politics is something I hope someday we can get back to.
One of the enduring messages that I values that I think Jimmy Carter stands for very clearly, and there are many. There are many excellent character traits and values that Jimmy Carter's life as a whole embodied. But one that I think, whether you are more conservative or liberal, no matter how you may have voted in 1980 or in 2024, that is unquestionably an American ideal, is that Jimmy Carter was a poor kid from a peanut farm in a tiny, tiny little town in Georgia, and he became President of the United States. That is unquestionably the best of us, the best expression of both the American promise, the American dream, and what democracies should help to foster and bring about. Folks, we ask you to join Tom and I, your thoughts, complicated, your criticisms, whether we agree with them or not, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Again, this is quite a moment. When we come back, we're going to go to the text lines. We're going to go to the phones. And before we get out of today's show, I have been trying to keep a running sort of rough sketched out list of all of the causes that Jimmy Carter's life moved forward exponentially, causes that are universal values that the vast majority of Americans and humans stand behind. To me, nonpartisan causes that basically make life better for all of us, that Jimmy Carter fundamentally improved. Special guest co-host today, Tom Paulswitz, himself a former Navy veteran, himself a former submariner. He's joining me every Thursday. You can catch us always here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us as we revisit the legacy of President Jimmy Carter, who today had his state funeral earlier this morning, a funeral planned in every detail by President Carter, because I have this characteristic in common with the president, maybe the only one. A little anal retentive about the details. So we're going to come back, continue this discussion. Join us all because we're all about real news and great conversation here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Keep it locked, y'all. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm a bad.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Millions of Americans take medicine like Ozempic and Zepbound. Many of them are overpaying by thousands of dollars a year. These GLP-1 medications for diabetes, weight loss, and more may not always be covered by your insurance, but GoodRx can help. GoodRx helps you save every month on prescriptions at over 70,000 pharmacies nationwide. Best of all, it's free to use. Check GoodRx to save on GLP-1s. Just go to GoodRx.com/GLP. That's GoodRx.com/GLP. GoodRx is not insurance, but can be used instead of insurance, including Medicare and other federal and state-funded programs.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
Hi, this is Beth, your new host for The Kitchen is Open, the award-winning show within the morning show. Each Monday morning at 9 a.m., we'll tackle topics, teach techniques, and tell you what to do or not to do when it comes to cooking or the kitchen. I'll also bring you interviews with local chefs and restaurant owners with insight on what it takes to make it in the food industry. Listen as I work with James, Seth, and others as we learn, laugh, and have fun. The Kitchen is Open. Same kitchen, new host.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot. Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever it's like the red alert. The,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Straight. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Everybody, welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a great show coming up after mine. You got Dom Salvia in the booth. His show follows mine every Monday through Friday. His starts at 4 o'clock. I'm here from 2 to 4. You want to get in? It is the last segment of the day. We're talking about President Jimmy Carter, whose state funeral concluded earlier today. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4822. Joined today by my special guest co-host. He's with me every Thursday. Welcome back, Tom. So glad to have you.
So good to be here. I do want to mention, though, because I just read this, and I think it's a fascinating thing that Jimmy Carter's favorite song was Imagine by John Lennon.
Mm.
And when you think about that, you know, him being as religious as he was, you know, he was much more, he wasn't about my religion is the right religion and everybody needs to follow it. It was like, imagine if we can all come together and we can all get along. And I think that's just, to me, that embodies who he was and what he brought to our world.
I'm going to give sort of almost a listing of all of these causes that I think Jimmy Carter forwarded in really fundamental ways, accomplishments that we all benefit from. But I want to give all of you a chance to chime in on the call or text lines, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Tom from Jackson, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Go ahead, sir. Thanks for your patience.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. What I'd like to mention is that one thing that's not talked about very much concerning Carter is that his bad decision of going after the unions, in particular the trucking unions, and by deregulating them, which affected hundreds of thousands of workers. And by doing that, that has turned a lot of the union base still against the Democratic Party to this day, where they cannot trust the Democratic Party, and I believe it's cost them some elections because of that. And my father had been a truck driver, and he felt that he'd possibly lost his job in the early 80s under Reagan because of how the laws had been loosened up because of Carter.
Yeah, I think it's a there. his presidential legacy, Tom, thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for the call. It's an important point. And I think an accurate criticism. Again, I noted a bit earlier, there were very valid criticisms from the left as to some of Carter's approach. He was not a left progressive. He was a Democrat, but he was a very centrist Democrat. If you put today's political spectrum on, like, across Jimmy Carter, he would still be a Democrat, but he'd be about as far, like, as close to the center of the spectrum as you can possibly get. And there are valid criticisms. Again, we had 440 days of hostages in Iran. He allowed the Shah of Iran to come to the United States for medical treatment. Yes. Roundly criticized for that. We had explosive inflation. People were waiting in the gas lines. Many things were extremely complicated. It's why he got primaried by Ted Kennedy. That's all part of, I think, almost any president, when you look at it, has, you don't always get it right. And it is indeed complicated. Tom, your thoughts on Carter's more complicated presidential legacy?
Yeah, I think there's a lot there, though. And when you start to unpack it, though, I think from a standpoint, and I'll just say that, yes, he was a centrist, but I would say from the old paradigm, you know, he was center because the Republican Party has moved so far right at this point that I'm not sure where it is. But he always still took everything into account and tried to make the best decision possible, even though it wasn't the decision people wanted him to make. You know, and I'll go back to just the Iran situation. You know, many people wanted him to go in and go get the hostages, but he knew that that could create, you know, a war that would probably still be going on today if he had done something like that. So he took a step back and said, I'm going to do what I can. And then he was criticized for doing something. He sent in helicopters to try to do a rescue attempt and it didn't work. And he was criticized for doing something. So he was in a no-win scenario based on what you said before, that he just wasn't, he didn't make the relationships he needed to make. And my guess is, and I was trying to get that out of Joe, but my guess is if he could go back and redo it, he could have. He would have spent more time creating relationships with people.
Yes.
So he had a better understanding of what people really wanted, not only inside of the Washington, but also outside.
One thing I do want to note about the Iran hostage situation. Some historians have claimed that Bill Barr, dispatched by the Reagan campaign, basically opened a back channel and killed the deal that Carter and his diplomats had negotiated to bring those hostages home. To enable Ronald Reagan.
They didn't kill it. They delayed it.
Yes. They delayed it so that Reagan took
the election. Yes.
And if you ever want to know why Bill Barr may be the second most dangerous man on the planet, I have I think two shows about it in the entirety. You can check those out at civicmedia.us/shows. Let me go through the list with the remaining time that we've got.
Excellent.
He identified wealth inequality as one of the great challenges of our time. It remains so today. The Camp David Accords, he created a lasting peace between Israel and Egypt. They weren't able to extend it to Palestine, but that peace between Israel and Egypt continues to this day. He created a desegregated church, as I mentioned before. He embraced full and equal rights for women. He supported ultimately gay marriage. He was all about disease eradication, basically helped eradicate guinea worm. Housing, the environment, solar panels, service to others, the Department of Energy and education, ethics processes, the federal civil service, the national parks, pardoned the Vietnam draft evaders. The list goes on and on. More accomplished by that man than most of us could ever hope to achieve. Folks, that's going to do it for Tom and I this afternoon. Dom Salvia is next. Remember, I'll stand up for you.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Matt and Aaron Ayers, Greg Bach gives us his popcorn pick of the week. Mike Clemens joins for a Packers update, and we talk poetry with James Roberts of the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's comedy?
I think for me, one of the quick ones that I have is like telling time on an analog clock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it takes me a minute.
It takes me a minute.
That was funny.
Yeah.
That was at least groan worthy. At least groan worthy.
I needed a minute for it to sink in.
No, that was funny. That's good.
Every weekday morning from 8 to 10, only on 97.5 FM, WFHR.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News special report. Crews with cadaver dogs are searching the rubble left behind by the wildfires in the Los Angeles area. At least five people have died. The biggest fires are still 0% contained. This man returned to his Altadena home, at least the spot where it used to be.
We had so many incredible memories with the pool, and I got here and I looked down at the pool full of water, and the irony of it is inescapable. Like, there's all this water, and then it was useless.
LA Fire Chief Kristen Crowley says these were the most destructive fires in Los Angeles' history.
Preliminary reports estimate the damage or destroyed structures to be in the thousands.
LA County Fire Chief Anthony Maroney says the red flag warning is still in effect.
The National Weather Service predicts the warning will remain in effect for Los Angeles County and the majority of Ventura County through Friday.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Michael Wallace.